Hello and welcome to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And you probably didn't recognize it. Scott's over here jamming out, playing the air flute. I saw that.
Little Marshall Tucker.
I saw that, playing the air flute there, weren't you?
I was.
A little bit of switch up. I wonder how many people tried to turn the dial when they heard that. Went, oh my goodness, what's going on?
Wrong show.
Better yet, how many people normally turn the dial and they heard that, and they're like, oh, man, this is cool. I'm going to rock out. And they're still here, and they're like, oh, gosh, they got me. I got to listen to those Yard Pros today. That's the funny part, right?
That is good.
So one of you out there, I'm sure, got suckered in right now to listen to the Yard Pro Show, so we want to hear from you. It is a glorious day. It's supposedly fall. Actually, the temperatures are cooling down. It's been rather warm. But it is a nice day, a little cloudy, a little overcast, but we are here live in the studio. We would love to hear from you. The show's pretty simple format. We like to discuss anything and everything related to the landscape, right?
We do.
And we would love to hear from you, because without you, the participant, the show wouldn't be near as much fun, and it would be awfully difficult to get either one of us to come in here, because we like talking to our listenership, do we not?
We do.
It's simple. You can give us a call. Phone lines are open, 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And as always, you can text us at 71307. That's 71307 if you'd like to give us a text. We would love to hear from you. Scott, wow. Jeez, we already have some text. Imagine that. Just a few seconds ago, too, man. They're coming at us fast. What do you know? So seasons are changing, right?
Quickly.
It's going to be down in the 40s, maybe in the upper 30s. In the next,
tomorrow.
You know, yep. in the upstate. Certainly in the 40s in the Midlands, and maybe even into the low country. I mean, my goodness, it is really just, wow, what can I say? Season is a changing. I have seen a lot of things here recently. As we have time going throughout the show, I want to mention it right now before we go to text and phone, just in case we don't, because I anticipate a busy, busy day. But large patch, saw it on a golf course on Zoysia this week. No, I was not playing. However, I played around week before last, first time in like 6 months. I might be able to get back into it for a short window while the temperatures are good, maybe. But I only play about 12 holes, and then I'm bored. Got to move on to something else, you know. I ought to make 12-hole golf courses. I'm just saying. But large patch, it's out there. If you hadn't put the fungicide, if you've got centipede, if you've got zoysia, if you've got St. Augustine, you've got to get the headway or the pillar out. I mean, you got to get it. With the amount of rain that we're getting from time to time, things of that nature, it is time to get that product out. Scott, let's go to the text real quick. Let's get this first one done. Good morning. I purchased Palisade Zoysia about 12 years ago from Carolina Fresh Farms. Last couple of years, I've had winter kill in a few spots. Thought it was large patch, but had a piece of sod yesterday by Clemson Exchange, and no disease was present. Any way to prevent winter kill? This takes it's in a couple of things. Takes until July to repair itself. Also, I re-sodded those areas. Any thoughts? I know you sent it to Clemson, and that's fine and dandy, but I do think it's large patch. Okay, I don't think it's as easy as winter kill. I don't see as much winter kill just from sheer cold causing issues. Here's the reason Clemson probably didn't see large patch. It may not be active at this point in your yard. As warm as we have been all the way through October, we're just now getting to that point where it's cooling off enough where you can see that large patch. Okay, so it may not be active in your yard right now in your soil, and if it's not active, it's not going to be there. Now, if you dug up 6 inches, even if you dig up 6 inches of soil, it's going to be hard to see. I still suspect it's probably large patch. So don't fall into the trap of, hey, it's not large patch, it's winter kill, so I'm not going to spend my money on fungicide. Get the fungicide out, because I guarantee you that's what's contributing to this downfall. Here's the other deal. Sometimes large patch may not present in the fall, Scott. It may not be there until we begin to see the soils warm in the spring of the year. It may lay dormant, believe it or not, and as the soils begin to warm in the spring of the year. But what happens, large patch disappears when the soil temperatures are above 70. So when we get the soil temperatures up above 70 in the spring of the year, it goes away. It's hard to detect. You don't know it's there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it can be the same situation when you send a sample to a lab, because the soil temperatures were still above 70 soil temperatures virtually everywhere in our state. it's probably not really showing up everywhere at this point. So I still suspect, I hate to go against my alma mater. I know I went to school there. I know Meg and those folks do a great job in their diagnostic lab, but they also are diagnosing the plant material you send them today,
right,
not the plant material you sent them when this plant had an issue back in the spring of the year, so or back last winter. So you still need to do the fungicide. If it is winter kill, one thing I could think, are we keeping the lawn fully hydrated? Are we keeping enough water on the grass during the winter? That's going to help protect you from winter kill. What is the growing environment? Is it a shadier environment that stays excessively wet in winter? If so, we need to figure out how to either get more sunlight, improve the drainage, or a combination of the two, right? Because I know the grass, if you're in the normal part of the upstate, all the way up to the base of the mountains of North Carolina, that grass, we typically don't see a lot of what we call winter kill. Not year after year. May have seen some last year because of our weird weather patterns, but we normally don't see that year after year. So, Scott, let's go to the phone lines. We have Bob in Greer. Hello, Bob, and welcome to the Yard Pros.
Well, thank you. Hi, Mills and Scott. Good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk with you.
Hey, I've got a question for you. I've done a little reading on thatching and plugging and scarfing and so forth, and I'd like to get your views on those three things with regard to fescue lawn in the fall.
Okay. As far as what? Let's take them one by one.
Okay. I know you've talked about plugging before, and the issues with plugging are the plugs come out, and then you get seeds go down in the holes, and then you don't break up the plugs, and so forth and so
on.
That doesn't really allow for a lot of seed area, especially if you have any kind of thatch at all in there. So is thatching better than plugging?
You know, for most lawns, and I know I'm going to have some lawn care operators fuss at me for saying this, most residential lawns, Bob, unless you just have, you know, 14 high school boys playing rugby or football on your front lawn, if there's really no need for those lawns to become severely compacted over a period of 1 to 2 to 3 years. Now, 8 years down the road and you do nothing to it, you may see some soil compaction. So if the soil is not compacted and you just want to go out there and remove some of that thatch layer because the grass deteriorated there in the summer, that's when we see excessive thatch on fescue typically, is because some of that fescue died during the summer.
Right.
If you go out there and remove that thatch layer and get back to a little bit more of the soil so the seed can make soil contact, yes, I think you're better off doing that than worrying about aerification or core aerification, pulling plugs out of the lawn. Now, if the lawn is not draining well, if the lawn is severely compacted, then aerification is certainly something you need to do. I will tell you, my personal lawn, I have not aerified the front lawn in 4, 5, 6 years. There's no need for me to, because I know I can take a screwdriver out and I can insert a screwdriver when the soils are hydrated with water. If you do this when it's dry, all soil profiles are going to, other than sand, are going to be pretty compacted because they don't have enough soil moisture. But when I have adequate soil moisture, I can insert a screwdriver with minimal effort. I'm not going to say zero effort, but with minimal effort. If I can push a screwdriver in 3 or 4 inches deep and not have to put all of my nearly 200 pounds of body weight behind it to get there or get a hammer out, the soils are, that's typically pliable enough. Now, if I'm seeing some compacted growth in an area, but don't see that as much on fescue, more on Bermuda or zoysias. If I'm seeing a lot of compacted growth and smaller dwarfed growth in an area in the lawn, I would imagine that area is probably compacted pretty severely. I mean, let the screwdriver tell you. I mean, it's kind of a touch, it's kind of a feel. Wouldn't you say, Scott?
Yep, I would.
I mean, and Scott, you chime in. I mean, what's your thoughts?
I've lived in my house 5 years and I haven't core-aerified my lawn.
So, but if you have fescue, you're reseeding, yes. I think what's equally important, if you're compacted, yes, you need to aerify the lawn, pull the cores. But you also, even if you do that, you're still in a situation where you need to figure out how to remove some of that thatch layer so that the seed can make soil contact. That's the key.
Well, your thoughts have been my thoughts all along, and many years ago, I have a John Deere walk-behind mower that I bought a thatch attachment for the front of it, and it doesn't do what a rental thatcher would do, really tear it up, pretty good. But it does a pretty good job, and my soil is, we've been in the house for 37 years, and it is really a loam soil. There's no, we don't have any clay in it, and it doesn't really get compacted. There's nobody, like you say, a rugby team running all over them. And so I think that's been, that's done really well in the past. But now I'm going to move on to the next question. On a Monday, I did the front. I thatched it. I had cut it down previously to 2 inches, and then I thatched it. And then, of course, I picked up the thatch, and then I reseeded it, and I put starter fertilizer. 4 days later, we had that big hurricane, part of it come up here, and I got 4 inches of rain in this area. Will that, and the seeds are slower to come up, will that amount of water hurt the seeds or kill them or drown them? Or?
Typically not. The concern I would have is that amount of water, is it going to move the seed? You know, as long as you can physically see the seed there, Bob, and you know that, you know, looking at the seed, if you're looking at it, you can physically see there and you're happy with the distribution, the amount of seed there, I would be patient. You know, mm-hmm. I do feel like with the cloudy weather, the little bit cooler temperatures from that storm, it's kind of slowed some germination down. And I think that's what you're seeing more than anything.
Yeah, about 3 days or 3 or 4 days earlier than that, I did the back, and that has really come up nice.
Yeah, it probably had an opportunity to germinate a little bit more sunlight before the storm hit. Now, I will say this. I've seen some funky things in my own lawn seeding this year, and I was going to mention it this morning, that it kind of in between the two storms, you know, I did my seed fairly early. I think I got it out maybe right before Florence or right after. And between those two storms, because we got so warm and muggy, I actually had some disease to come back in, some brown patch to become active again that was still kind of laying there latently because, you know, a horticulturist that works for a sod company that sells products, it's too hard for me to find fungicide to put on my yard. Yeah, right. Right, Bob? But, you know, I'm like the cobbler's kid, the shoe cobbler's kids. You know, they never have shoes to wear. But, yeah, I think there was still – I know there was some disease, and it could be one of those situations where you got a little bit of disease pressure on that seedling. And, you know, mine's beginning to rebound finally. I haven't reseeded that area. I decided I would just be patient for a week or two, see what happens.
And if I don't see, like, a couple of area spots or something that the seeds are not coming up, am I best off to just scarf it up a little bit with a rake and then put the seed down again?
Do that. But if you're going to do that, you're going to be in the same situation I'm in. It's something you and I both need to do in the next probably 2 weeks. Because with this cooler weather coming in, soil temperatures begin to drop, and then it's going to take even longer for seed to germinate. So it's one of those – I'm going to try to make that decision by the end of next week in my own personal lawn.
Okay. And any seeds that do not germinate before the real cold and the frost and so forth, will they germinate in the spring?
Sometimes they will. It's kind of a crapshoot of how much the birds and the crows will eat and how well that – if it has already cracked that seed coat, it may not survive the winter. But if it never cracks that seed coat, a lot of times that seed will just lay dormant on top of the soil, and when the soils begin to warm, you may see it germinate.
Okay. Well, I guess you've answered my questions, and that's what I really wanted to know. I didn't know if my seeds were dead out there and I should redo it again or what have you.
But I'd be patient about another week, see what happens.
You know, I have one other comment. With all that we do for these lawns and looking at, like you said, getting fungicide out and fertilizer and seeding and thatching and plugging and whatever, do you guys ever think about going to AstroTurf?
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? Actually, I was at a little launching for a retirement of a golf superintendent. I'm sure he doesn't mind me mentioning Mr. Harold Burns. Great guy. Been in the industry a long time. And I said, well, I guess you got time. And he was talking about the things he was doing around the house. You know, this man has grown grass and managed grass for his entire adult life. And he and I joked. I said, you know, if I'm in your shoes, I think I may just have to go to AstroTurf.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's a little house in our neighborhood. It's a small yard in the front. And they put AstroTurf down, and my wife gets me to drive by there all the time. She says, look how nice that is. Look at it. I mean, it's just perfect. That's all you need is a vacuum or a blower.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Nothing else. No sprinkler or nothing. Okay, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate your help all the time.
Thank you. Have a great weekend gardening.
All right. Thank you, too. Right. Bye-bye.
Scott, great call, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
It's always a pleasure to hear from Mr. Bob. We are going to stay with the phone lines real quick. We have Marty in Columbia. Always good to talk with our folks down there in the Midlands and the great metropolitan Columbia area. Hello, Marty, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Good morning.
Hey.
I love to start my weekend listening to you guys.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah. Shout out to the folks over here at Columbia Sod Farm, too, because they're great folks, Suzanne and all those.
Yeah, Susie and Stuart, I guess we'll keep them, won't we, Scott?
Might as well.
No, I hear nothing but good things out of those two individuals. So one of two things, either they're – really know how to pay you folks off and encourage you to call the show, or I think what's going on is they're really, honestly, they're just good, genuine people. They're hard workers, they're good, genuine people, and they're full of knowledge, and they're willing to help. And that's the recipe it takes to be successful, and we're lucky to have them and really enjoy their presence, and I've enjoyed working with them over the years. Great folks.
Anyway, I've got some headway. And I need some help figuring out how to calibrate the spreader. I've got a Lesko spreader.
Okay. Well, since you like Susie so much, you can call her. No, I'm just joking.
I know. Yeah.
So you got a Lesko spreader
and
you got headway.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I've got St. Augustine grass, about 5,000 square feet.
Okay. When you're calibrating a spreader, and you know, we probably, I don't know, man, it's kind of hard to get the visual sometimes when you describe things. But in essence, what we know about the headway, we know that the given rate, we have to get X amount out. So if you got 5,000 square feet, Scott, what is it, roughly half that bag has to go on the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
So you can calibrate the spreader by figuring out how wide of a pattern does it spread, correct? So mm-hmm. you maybe put a tarp out on your driveway or out in front of the house or even on the lawn. You put a blue tarp out. You're going to fill the hopper up with a given amount. You're going to weigh it out and know I put X amount in the hopper. The first thing we want to do is we want to make a straight run over X number of feet. It's all math. So let's say it's 100 feet or make it easier. Let's say it's 20 feet. Then we take the width that it spread, correct? So we can mm-hmm. take the 20 feet, let's say it spread 10 feet wide. We know we just covered 200 square feet. So we do some simple math. If we know the rate, I think on that product, Scott, what is it, around 3 pounds per thousand? So we know we can take 3 pounds and figure out how many pounds we're supposed to be on 200 feet. So it would be one-fifth of that, of 3 pounds,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you can go pour what you had in the hopper. You can pour it out, weigh it, see how close am I, and then you can make little adjustments to your dial.
Now, let me stop you. When you say weigh it, the only scale I've got is just like a regular bathroom scale. Should I be, you know?
If it were me for this product or any type of product, I think if you find a kitchen scale that weighs up to about 10 or 12 pounds and, you know, use some kind of bowl that you're not going to use again inside, okay? But you can take a little kitchen scale, use it. So that's the way you would calibrate a spreader, okay? I would do all of this. The reason I do it on a blue tarp, that product's expensive, right? So then we can take the tarp.
Yes.
And what we could do instead of weighing what's in the hopper, you could take the tarp, fold it up, and measure what you put out in that 200 square feet. You can measure that, weigh it itself, and that'll tell you how much did I get here, how much do I really need. And this goes for fertilizer, for anything. If you really want to do it the right way, that's the way the professionals do it. They take the time, and then they keep meticulous records, okay? All professionals, if they're licensed, have to keep spray records the whole nine yards. They keep meticulous records so that when they go use that product again next year, they can go look it up in the book and say, all right, what setting do I need? Now, your other option is you can visit or you look on that label on that bag, and it should tell you, it may or may not tell you what the Lesko spreader rate is. I think Syngenta Products, who makes Headway, has the Lesko spreader setting on their bag, if I'm not mistaken.
Now, look, because I don't know if I saw it on there or not. Somebody told me go put it on about 16.
Yep.
16 or 14.
Well, and one thing I suggest, you are the homeowner, you are the end user, and you are the applicator. That's the most important part. You are the applicator. we've said this a long time in the stores. We really hesitate to give any suggestions. We may do it, but we hesitate to do it for two reasons. Number one, that suggested rate that's on that bag may not be exact. Okay, it's a suggested rate. Number two, because we deal with so many products and so many scenarios, it's hard to remember with 100% certainty what everything is about, whether we 100% remember that correctly. So I think if you know how to calibrate and you take the time to calibrate, I know it takes a little bit of time, it would be worth your time to know and then record that information and have it in the future.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, the kitchen scale makes sense. That was what I was trying to figure out. If I need to make 2 pounds or 3 pounds.
That's right.
I don't know what that looks like in a bag. I know I got a 50-pound, or what is it, a 40-pound bag?
30, I think. Yeah.
30 pounds, yeah. Okay. So, all right. Well, I appreciate it.
All right.
Have a good weekend.
You do the same. Thank you for giving us a call, and happy weekend gardening. Scott, you know, great call. Good questions.
What's a good question?
Man, we lost a caller. Maybe we'll get another caller here in a few seconds. What do you say? Think so?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Maybe.
Perhaps? So, folks, you are listening to the Yard Pro Show. Oh, Scott's showing it to me. I skipped it this morning. It says we have a minute left before the bottom of the hour break. What do you think, Scott?
We got time.
We got time? What is it? Give me the drum roll. It's the Drought Report. Oh, there's the drum roll with a little bit of Marshall Tucker. Drought Report, folks. Looking fairly decent. Coastal South Carolina, extreme southwest coast. Charleston, down in that area. Bluffton, Hilton Head, that area. We are seeing some drought, as well as it looks like Anderson, McCormick, and Greenwood counties. Still seeing a little bit of drought in those areas, folks, so be aware of that. Keep your soils hydrated. Keep your plants hydrated. Keep your grasses hydrated. We're going into winter dormancy. Looks like at a rapid pace. We want to make sure that cell structure is hydrated going into it. You're listening to the Yard Pro Show. Give us a call during this bottom of the hour break at 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And when we'll come back, we'll get back to that text line, 71307, and we'll answer a few questions. We'll talk to you in a few.
And welcome back to the second half of the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms.
Man, I had to make you do that.
What were you doing?
I was trying to tell you to welcome them back, but over there jamming. I mean, you're like playing the drums.
Well, you're pointing this way, and I thought somebody was standing behind me.
Yeah. Playing and jamming out. I mean, this is like Scott's Goofball Hour.
Gosh.
What?
I love that song.
Do you? You must. You chose it. By the way, folks, if you don't like the new bumper and intro music, talk to Scott. Send him an email. Send him an email because he's the one who did it. We did have a few texts right before we went off the air and the bottom of the hour of the show. I will tell you, one of the texts, it says, great, what is this call number? We would love to have you call us because the phone lines are open. I mean, like, really open. And I really didn't prepare anything. Did you, Scott?
Well, I got the drought report.
I mean, if they don't call in, I guess I could go back and I can pull
What's
out.
What's that number again?
I can pull out, you know, all the different nitrogen sources and, you know, how they react in the soil and how they affect
plant growth. You keep saying that. One day you're going to have to turn around and do that.
Yeah, I'm afraid one day somebody's going to call my hand on that.
You might want to break out your old school notes.
Yeah, I probably need to do that. I need to get my old textbooks out. I don't know, and notebook. Notebooks are nice, man. They're vintage, and they've never been used. Did you catch that? Blank pages.
Well, that's about it.
Blank pages, man. Tell you what, every year the kids are like, we need notebooks to go back to school. And I just go into my college box and say, here's one. You can have this. Well, that's from college. It's already – no. And
just don't press too hard on the paper. It'll tear.
Yeah, paper's a little brittle, son, but, you know, hey, use a notebook.
It's brown on the edges.
Yeah, plenty of clean sheets here other than the brown edges because of the age. What is the call number? 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. 1063. I would love to see. You know what's neat about the studio? We're not sitting in there with our producer. We're not sitting in there with Money Pity with Angela. But from this window, there it goes. You see it? You see it, Scott? You don't ever get to see the window. You see
it? I can't. I got two monitors in front of my head.
There's a little green light that flashes when you call in. So I know if you're calling, right? So thanks for calling for whoever has. At least we won't bore you to death today. My friend's gardenias didn't bloom this year, and she is curious as to why. Thanks, Ann and Greer. You know, I think there are a lot of things that can go into a lot of plants this year, and hey, they did weird things, they haven't done it before. Right off the top of my head, a couple things I can think of. Pruning. Did we prune at an inappropriate time that we cut all the bud set off? All right, with a gardenia, they're gonna bloom on New Year's growth, right? Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly. So if they were pruned after that spring flush and pruned prior to the budding, you could have removed all the buds. I tell you another thing that probably impacted this, temperature, because we were a lot cooler a lot of days and a lot of cloud cover. I think temperature and lack of sunlight probably played into this. And the other thing is fertility. I can't stress this enough. Now is a great time to fertilize your shrubs. Triple 14 Wood Ace is what I would suggest. It's what I use in my lawn. Now is a great time to prune your shrub. I mean, to fertilize your shrubbery. Okay, I know you're thinking, well, these plants are getting ready to go asleep. It's winter. I don't care. You should fertilize your shrubbery twice a year, once in the fall, once in the spring.
They store that.
And if we keep that fertility where it needs to be for the plant, it's not under stress. And then when we do see other stresses like temperature, like lack of water, if the plant's healthier, it's going to survive those stresses much easier. It's the same with lawns. It's the same with landscape plants. It's all the same, folks. So don't neglect your shrubbery. Yeah, save a shrub today. That'd be a good little token to go about, right?
You just do what I do, just rip them all up.
Be a good marketing ploy. Save your shrubs today. Fertilize with Triple 14 Wood Ace.
Well, I hear you.
By Carolina Fresh Farms. What do you say?
How many cups of coffee have you had already?
Well, I drink decaf. Doesn't matter.
Oh, it's... Is that really decaf?
Yeah, it's all I drink.
Oh.
I can't drink caffeinated coffee, man. I'm already jacked up. Could you imagine me on caffeine?
I would love to see it now.
Really? They got pad on this room. That's why. You know why they got padded walls? Because Mills might drink caffeine.
Wait till the golf show.
So let's go to Dan in Greer. We're going to go right back to the phone lines. We'll get there. Hello, Dan, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Thank you. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So this is a follow-up call. I called four Saturdays ago and was just starting my annual lawn renovation, and you guys were giving me some direction. I ended up putting down some Bluetooth fescue seed, and it's coming up nicely. I've mowed once. It looks really good. I'm really happy with it. It actually blends pretty well with my creeping red. So that's been good. I have a couple of questions relating to it. If you're at grade level and you're off to the side looking at the yard, it looks beautiful. I'm the envy of all my neighbors. When you walk in it, of course, and you're looking straight down, it's still thinner than I expected. And I thought, when I put down seed, I thought, wow, I'm putting out a lot of seed here. This is going to be great. So it's a little less dense than what I had expected at this point. So I'm interested in maybe going back and doing a little bit more seeding, maybe. But the other part of the issue is I've got two or three areas where I've got a lot of clumpy, that's not a lot, I've got two or three areas where I have clumpy fescue that I thought I had killed off, and apparently I didn't do that adequately. So it's still there, and then I've got some nutsedge coming up right now in some areas, and maybe a little bit of Bermuda. So I'd like to thicken up and get more with the Bluetooth, but I've got these other obstacles. At the moment, I'm trying to figure out the best way to attack that. The clumpy fescue is not so much that I couldn't just dig that out by hand and put some topsoil back in there and put some seed in. But as far as the nutsedge goes, I know that's I'm going to have to put something down on that. So can you kind of help me navigate wanting to thicken up what I've got a good start on?
Yeah,
and
sure.
Dealing with the other stuff.
Yeah, and Scott, you chime in, you know, at any point in this, and I think it's pretty simple. I think we have to keep things simple, and the most important thing you can do right now is what's going to impact you long term, and what's the most important thing to do right now. And Dan, that's grow grass. That's the most important thing. Okay. Now the weed issues. And I'll touch on those in just a second for a brief moment. But I don't want to spend a lot of time on the weed issues because, to me, those weed issues are something that are either Mother Nature's going to take care of by ways of going into dormancy and like the nutsedge, and, hey, it's going to disappear here in the next month anyway. I don't want you focusing on weed issues as much as let's talk about what's going on with your grass. Your grass seeds, your new seedlings are only about a month old. You've probably, have you mowed at all yet, or have you got one mowing?
One time.
All right. What you're going to see, you're still looking at juvenile seeds, so it can be it can misguide you a little bit, thinking, man, this might be too thin. If you know you put enough seed out there and you felt like you were good on your seed, you need to keep mowing. You probably about the time, I'm sure you haven't fertilized since you seeded, and that was a month ago, correct?
Yeah, I put down the starter with it, but that was the last of it.
So it is now time to put down something with higher nitrogen. You've mowed it once. I've got the same issue in my yard. I've got a lot of new seedlings this year. And I did the same thing. I got out of the truck one evening, and I looked at the yard, and I scratched my head, and I said, my goodness, is this thick enough? And what I have to, even myself as a professional, I have to remind myself, I'm looking at immature fescue and bluegrass seedlings right now that might be, a millimeter wide in the blade thickness, two at the most.
Right.
We know that's going to mature out. It's only 4 weeks old. We need to mow it a few more times. We need to fertilize it with nitrogen. You will see that mature out over the next 4 to 6 to 8 weeks and to give you a thicker lawn. So if you feel confident you got enough seed out, I don't know if it warrants reseeding at this point. I think you just need to maintain what you have and fertilize it. Now, it is a young seedling.
Okay.
So when you go to fertilize, I want to make sure that turf is dry. We don't want to fertilize early in the morning with the dew. We don't want to fertilize right after an irrigation event where we got a lot of moisture, because that young seedling is going to be susceptible to some potential leaf burn from the salts and just the nitrogen in the fertilizer. Now, the Lebanon fertilizers are very safe. I don't want people to fear, oh, man, I want to burn my lawn. I'm just telling you, it's a young, new seedling. When you fertilize, you want to make sure you do it in the middle of the day when it's dry. And then you want to water it in afterwards, okay? I think you need to get it fertilized. You need to keep mowing once a week. If you want to address the nutsedge, I don't know if you're going to have time, because I still would want you to wait another couple, 3-4 weeks before you spray Monument. By the time you get around to when you can spray it, because you got young seedlings, I don't know if it's going to be beneficial to you. So when that nutsedge begins to rear its ugly head in May of next year, that's when I want you to, and you can't use Monument. You have to use Sedgehammer. I shouldn't have said Monument.
Forget I said that. Yeah, I've got Sedgehammer actually on hand.
You use Monument, man, you are going to toast all that cool season, because Monument will actually toast cool season grass. But Sedgehammer. So if you got some Sedgehammer on hand, I think I will just hold on to it till May. When you see that nutsedge coming up, becoming a problem before we get too hot, I want you to mow the lawn, let the nutsedge reappear above the lawn, spray it with a good surfactant with the Sedgehammer, and do not mow it for 7 to 10 to 14 days. That gives us time for that active ingredient to translocate through that plant and give you better control. As far as the Bermuda, I've noticed that in my lawn, because fall has been extended, and it's been, summer has been extended into fall. And I've noticed a little bit more Bermuda, especially in the last 2 weeks, kind of rear its head. I'm not overly concerned about it. I'm going to leave it alone, because I know it's going to go dormant here in a couple of weeks. And I know that the competition from the fescue will kind of keep it at bay, because the fescue will be higher than that next spring and summer. And, it may rear its head. At some point, you may find that you need to go in there and clean that one area out, which is repeated applications of Roundup is the easiest, most economical way to do it. But I wouldn't be concerned about the weed issues at this point. I would be concerned about growing the grass that I have germinated is what my goal would be.
Okay, so for the nitrogen product, I'll just follow what's on your premium plan, probably on your website.
Yeah, I think it's a 2505, correct, Scott?
It is.
So great product.
Yeah, sounds right.
But you need to get that out maybe this week, next week. The next 2 weeks, get the 2505 out while the soil temps are still a little warmer and the grass can utilize it.
Okay, and then just a kind of a more general question. This is my fourth year in a row, kind of going through this routine. It seems like I get a very good start in the fall. It looks beautiful. I get excited about the spring, and then spring comes. It's okay initially, and then it just seems to die out, and I'm left with these clumpy fescues and so on. I don't know if I need to start doing something from a preventive standpoint as far as a fungicide or something like that.
Would you recommend
that preventively?
Yes, definitely. So when we get into June, we begin to get warm and muggy at night. You need to start putting some fungicide down, and unfortunately, you're going to have to reapply about every 21 to 28 days during that period of fungal development, which is going to be pretty much all summer. As long as we're getting rain, we're humid. So managing water can help you, and managing mowing heights next spring. When we start getting warmer, it sounds crazy, but if you don't let it get to 6 inches tall, if and you keep it more at that 3 to 4 inch height, then we're going to keep the leaf surface drier because it's a little bit shorter grass. So there are a lot of things that can come, little things you can do next spring and summer that will probably help you. But at the same point, or same token, you're still going to have some issues. It's fescue. You know, we're not in the best market for it. All right?
Yeah. Okay. We'll give that a try. I sure appreciate your help.
Thank you. You have a great weekend.
All right. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Scott, I want to stay with the phone lines in the order which we receive them, although we're getting a little bit behind. We'll go to Patty in Lexington. Hello, Patty, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I planted palawana trees, and they just were a mess. They were coming up everywhere. The leaves were going everywhere, and they're invasive. We did not know this when we got them. We wanted something that would give us shade. So we ended up getting them cut down. However, they are like weeds. They just come up everywhere. Even though the tree has come down, they're apparently coming up through the roots, and we do not know how to get rid of them. We mow, we chop, we dig, and they still just come up.
Well, all right, we got a couple of options. The first option is actually my son's mentality. He was actually washing his car last night. I can't believe it, Patty. Mm-hmm. You know, I told him, I said, son, you got a date tomorrow night. You probably need to wash your car. Now, Scott's looking at me bright-eyed. That's right. My son has a date.
No, it's going to rain today. That's what I was.
And I said, you probably need to wash your car. And he looked at me. And of course, he was kind of jokingly. But part of me thinks he was being truthful. He's like, Dad, I didn't think you washed cars. I thought you just got new ones when they got dirty. So I was going to tell you, what you could do is just sell your house and let this be somebody else's problem. They are invasive. They are difficult to deal with. There are a couple of species of trees and shrubs out there that can be the same way. First and foremost, Patty, I think the sensible thing to do is you can go out there and clip. You know, if you cut off at the soil level where the shoots are coming up from the old root material, over a period of time, if you starve that root system from any green growth and any leaves, over a period of time, that root system naturally is not going to be able to sustain life, and it will die. Would you not agree with that, Scott?
Yes.
So that's an option. Your other option is using a product like Brush Killer. Now, you have to be careful about what other desired plants are in this area. Brush Killer is actually pretty safe around grasses, so it's not going to hurt a lawn area if this is growing out into a grassed area. But you could go out there and use some Brush Killer on these shoots that are coming up. And, yes, it is going to take you probably 6 months, maybe 12 months to really get this under control, it would be my estimate. It's going to take a little while. And you're right, it is a pretty invasive species. So I'm sorry you had it there, it didn't work out, now you want to remove it. How do I get rid of it? I think your mechanical means is a good way, in my opinion. But if you don't have time dedicated – and don't want to go out there every weekend and clip these new shoots, then, yes, you may want to drop back and punt and go to the chemical side of things, which is some kind of, you know, a lot of companies manufacture a product called Brush Killer. And I'd probably look at something like that. Wouldn't you, Scott?
That's where I would go.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. And we will give it a whirl and see what we can get done.
Give it a whirl.
Yeah, they are everywhere.
Yep, you're up for a battle.
If my grass grew this good, we would be, you know, we would be rich.
That's right. So you're up for a battle, but you can win the battle. And at the end of the day, just, you know, hey, you can always get a for sale by owner sign at your local hardware store, you know. And I joke with folks like that, but I think in all seriousness, I think it lets you know that, hey, yeah, this is up for a battle. You have to be persistent. And you have to be persistent in removing any of that shoot growth that's coming up. I know crepe myrtles are bad about the same thing. So if you're persistent over a period of time, you'll get it going.
Well, right. And, you know, I'm glad also that hopefully other people that are listening to your show will hear this because so many people do not know and realize and think, oh, I'm going to plant this tree and it's going to be wonderful.
Yep.
And this is what you get. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patty. Have a great week here. Scott, we're going to stay with the phone lines. We have our last caller, probably the last one of the day, because I do have a lot of text I want to get to. I promise you, texters, I will get to you. Jan in Greenville has a question about a lot of questions about trees and whatnot right now, wouldn't you say? Hello, Jan, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Yes, hi. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I spent a lot of money on Leland cypress trees. They were about 6 feet tall, got them all planted, looked absolutely beautiful in April. And now about half of them, as I've been trying to educate myself and reading up about them, all the needles are falling off. Half of them are brown. And I guess what I have going on is blight. And I tried to, you know, do everything that they said, plant them far apart, plenty of air, et cetera, et cetera. I went ahead and purchased some copper-based fungicide.
Okay.
And spent on a time of day that they said was the proper time to do it, spraying most of them. Is that worthwhile? Is it already too late? And for blight, once all those needles fall off, would by any chance they come back in the spring?
Sometimes you will see a little bit of regrowth. I think you're going down the right token. You have mentioned, you know, hey, I'm going to apply a fungicide. Copper-based fungicide is really interesting. Came out of the metal industry years ago in Europe, where a farmer would be in his metal working shop and the products they were using in that shop, he would have a copper material as a waste product, and he started throwing that outside next to his vineyard and noticed that the grapes grew better. And what it was, in essence, it's one of the first products discovered that can be used as a fungicide. So they're still around today. They have withstood the test of time. Copper-based fungicides are still used extensively in the viticulture industry, in the wine or the grape industry. So they're great products. They are more of a contact product. So if you spray it, you get a heavy rain, it's going to wash it off. But that's certainly going to help. The other question I would have is, what have you done since you've planted these trees? What have you done fertilizer-wise? And my statement would be, you need to fertilize them now, and you need to fertilize them again in the spring of the year, because we can kind of push through, I feel like, a little bit of this downturn in the plant. If we have it actively growing, I think you'll see, because Leland's grow pretty fast, what we're hoping is that we can outgrow this disease. And what we hope next year is we don't get the amount of rain and cloud cover and cloudy days that we had this year, and maybe you don't have this problem. Because you're right, that particular disease, if you think that's what it is certainly going to be worse when we have poor air movement, when we have cloudy, overcast, wet days, and the leaves on the plant or the needles have prolonged leaf wetness. So, hopefully next year we'll bring a better growing season. I think you got what you got right now, and I think I would be patient and see what reflushes growth in the spring. And what doesn't reflush growth, prune it out, it would be my suggestion. And maybe you can prune it back to some living tissue on the stem and push some more growth.
Okay. I did do one fertilization, but I will do the one coming up for the fall. And just one last quick question. Is that giant green arborvitae a better choice if I'm trying to look for a fast-growing privacy-type tree?
The green giant arborvitae?
Yeah, the arborvitae, yeah.
Yeah, that would be a better choice than a Leland. Yeah, that or a Cryptomeria. Those would be – or a Carolina Sapphire.
Carolina Southfire. Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much,
guys. You are welcome.
I'll get working.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Scott, wow, this has gone fast. I've got about a minute and a half. Let's see if I can get through a couple of texts. All right, what do you say?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Just like to thank you guys for your recommendation for some ryegrass and great service I received at the Dunkin' store. So apparently Ryan is now paying for good comments as well. So Columbia and Ryan.
That's because Ryan's been out of town.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
Yeah. So, no, we do appreciate that. And, you know, Dunkin' Store Anderson store, Aiken store, Rock Hill store. I mean, honestly, Charleston store, all of them, very, very delighted in that we're able to work with such a good group of individuals. This is a fun company,
it
is it not?
I love it.
It is bar none. It's, you know why I've been here? It's the best place I ever worked. I'll say
yeah.
It's just a good environment. Customer has a Japanese maple that was planted from the field, or from the field 2 years ago. It has settled to center by 6 inches. Is to dig under the low side of the root ball in February, March, shore that up with more soil. What do you think? The tree is now, yes. February, March, sometimes in the winter, if you go in there, dig out wide, dig deep, pry it back up where you need it, shove some soil underneath. I think that's the best way to solve that so you can get it where you want it. So, Scott, it's been a delight.
It has.
You have been listening to the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. If you like to find us during the week, it's very simple, www.carolinafreshfarms.com. We would love to hear from you. There you can find a link to all of our stores and our store hours. We hope you have a great week gardening, and we'll talk to you next week.